Let's listen together to God's word for us as we find it in John's Gospel, John chapter 2, and we're going to be reading from verse 1 to verse 11. You can find it on page 1064 of the Pew Bibles if you'd like to follow along. John chapter 2, reading from verse 1. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Dear woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My time has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." This, the first of his miraculous signs, Jesus performed in Cana of Galilee. He thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him. Everybody loves a good wedding, don't they? I have to confess, actually, that in my case, I'm a sort of I have mixed feelings about weddings. It's not just because I'm a BOF, a boring old fella, in case you thought I was going to be rude in church. But to be honest, I have mixed feelings about weddings as I've been involved in having to organize them for the past 25 years or so. Because on the one hand, yes, the joy of the happy couple is infectious. But on the other hand, there's that feeling, this is the biggest day of their lives. This is one of the biggest days in the life of their lives of their families. I just hope I don't do anything to mess this up. And there's always that huge sense of relief when the married couple walk out the church door afterwards. Because you know, look, if anything goes wrong after this, if anything spoils the wedding day, it's not my fault and I don't have to fix it. And that's lovely. So I can understand probably how the unnamed person at this wedding we've just been reading about would have been feeling. And actually, in those days and in that culture, they'd have been feeling even more shame than I would have felt if something went wrong. Because they lived in a shame culture. The shame of having ruined the family wedding because there wasn't enough wine. You can just imagine it. And that culture, if you don't know, wedding celebrations could last anything up to a week, which is probably the major reason why the wine ran out. Perhaps it was just that they had too many Scottish relatives who all turned up. I don't know. That could be the other reason, but we'll not go there. But very thankfully for the guilty person at this wedding whose fault it was, Jesus was an invited guest. And there, intractable, insoluble problem was solved in an instant as Jesus miraculously turned not just 1 or 2 liters but over 500 liters or 125 gallons or so of water into top quality wine. Pretty spectacular way to get someone else out of a fix. John witnessed this miracle. But later on in his life, as he's writing this account of Jesus' life, as he looks back later and he reflects on what Jesus did here, he realizes that the same as all of the other miracles that Jesus has performed, Jesus didn't just do this as some spectacular feat to get people's attention, but rather that these miracles that Jesus performed, they were pointers, if you like, to who Jesus is, to why Jesus came, to what he was going to do. And that's why John describes this as the first of Jesus' miraculous signs, and all the way through the gospel he describes Jesus' miracles as signs. As he says here, they're signs which Jesus performed which reveal his glory. In other words, they reveal stuff about Jesus to him. So what does this sign reveal about Jesus? Well, there's actually a fairly obvious one that I'm going to mention, and I hope you don't mind me insulting your intelligence by doing it. But first of all, it clearly points to Jesus being the Son of God. As John the Baptist actually just in the previous chapter has been saying, look, this is the Son of God. Because you might get a magician who'll perform a magic trick and appear to change a glass of water into wine or something like that, but this was no illusionist's trick just to get people's applause. Because actually, when you look at it, most of the people at that wedding were completely unaware that anything miraculous had happened. It was only Mary, the disciples, and the servants who actually knew what had happened, who knew there'd been no magic tricks, but who knew Jesus had changed all of this water into wine. So he wasn't doing it to grab attention. And I don't know whether you've noticed it or not, but normal human beings don't tend to go around changing water into wine and doing stuff like that. I certainly can't manage it. I'm sure none of you could. Even more amazing, actually, is here Jesus seems to change the water into wine without even a command or anything. He just wills it and it happens. Now, that's impossible. Impossible for even the most intelligent, the most powerful human being, the most incredible person who has ever lived. Human beings just don't do that. You have to be something amazing. Seems incredible to us, but actually, if you think about it, remember what John has written at the very beginning of his gospel about Jesus. He said, "This is the one through whom all things were made, and without whom nothing was made that has been made." Now, when you think of it in that way, it's actually not a big deal for someone like that to take some water and to turn it into wine, even a large quantity of it. If you are the all-powerful creator, well, then you can do anything you want. You can do what you like with your creation, even things that others might think are impossible. And so Jesus, by turning this water into wine, revealed his glory, as John said. He revealed something of his power as the creator God. He revealed his godness, if you like. So that's one of the things the sign points to, but it doesn't just point to Jesus being the Son of God. Through this sign, Jesus is also pointing to why he came. And it symbolizes here the water turning into wine, that Jesus has actually come to replace a lifeless, dead religion with life that is full of his power and his spirit. Because if you look at what happens in the story, the wine has run out, and there's absolutely nothing that anybody can do about that. Nobody can stock up the wine again. They can't get to another village or anything else like that in time. They've got these stone water jars, and they can use them for religious ceremonial purposes. That's what they were used for people washing their hands or washing themselves, if you like, as they came to the ceremony. They could take those and they could refill them with water as many times as they wanted. People could wash themselves symbolically as many times as they wanted to do, but none of that is ever going to solve the problem that there's no wine. And yet Jesus comes along and provides this abundance. Not just a little bit, but containers full to the brim and overflowing. And what he's doing there is he's symbolizing why he has come. Because if you go back to the Old Testament, God regularly used the wine, if you like, as a symbol there, as part of the harvest. If people strayed from God and they went into this dead sort of superstitious religion, God warned them that their vines would produce little wine. But God also promised that if people returned to him in genuine faith, that he would one day send the Messiah, the Savior. And one of the signs of that Messiah coming would be that there'd be a wine flowing in abundance. Amos ends his book actually by saying that new wine will drip from the mountains and flow from all the hills. So what Jesus here is doing, on the one hand, pointing out to people, look, if you have this sort of religion that's just based on slavishly following a whole pile of rules and regulations in the hope that maybe one day you'll get enough points to pass God's exam, forget it. It's lifeless. It's powerless. Because all of that is just purely external. And you can wash yourself ceremonially as many times as you like. It's all just on the outside. What human beings need is transformation inside. And what Jesus shows through this sign, if you like, is that he has come, as we say later, to give life to the full. He's pointing back and forward here the whole time. He's pointing back, rewinding sort of back to the Garden of Eden. Because in the Garden of Eden, the first human beings, before they had sinned, were able to enjoy God's presence and God's blessing, and they had an abundance of everything. And here, if you like, is Jesus saying, look, my presence as God, I can give that again. He's also pointing forward to what he describes in other places in the Bible as the heavenly wedding feast. There's going to be that day when God's going to throw a lavish feast to celebrate the final uniting of his Son with all his faithful people. There's going to be an abundance of everything, not just at that feast, but forevermore. So Jesus is pointing back, he's pointing forward, he's saying, you can have real life in me. You don't find life in this dead outward religion, you find life through me. If we believe in him, it's something totally different to any other outward religion. Because Jesus doesn't just give us the chance to change outwardly, but to change inwardly, because he comes and he shares his life and his power in us. So there are those two big signs. But there's also other things that another sign here that sometimes it's very, very easy to miss. And that's actually that God wants to share in the everyday parts of our lives as well, and to transform them. It's actually amazing when you think about it, that here's God in human flesh. And what does he want to do? He wants to go along and celebrate at this family wedding and to enjoy it along with them. He wants to be part of their celebration. And actually, one of the other amazing things here is the timing of this miracle. Jesus has just begun to preach and teach. Jesus has set out on this mission that if you read through all of the Gospels, you'll see he is clearly focused on the whole way through. He wants to fulfill the mission his Father has given him, and nothing's going to deflect him from that. And yet here he is, right at the very beginning of that mission. And he's invited to a family wedding, and he takes the time out to go along. He doesn't say, sorry, I'm too busy with these other important things. He says, yeah, I want to be there, because my presence there can actually make things better. And actually, it's one of the things that the more I read God's word, the more you pick up on, is that when you read even of all of the, so many of the miracles Jesus performs, he actually performs them in the middle of people's everyday lives. And he loves sharing in people's lives and improving those lives and just being part of them. The great thing about our God, he's not a God who sort of sits in heaven remote and goes, ooh, look at that lot. Who would want anything to do with those dirty little creatures? And certainly who would want anything to do with their boring, insignificant little lives? What Jesus shows us here is that this is one who wants to be with us always. This is one who, if we have faith in him, comes and lives in us and actually delights to share in all of our everyday experiences. He wants to share in all of our lives to make the good times better. And he also wants to provide his power, his help, his strength for the tough times, so that we can get through those with him. There's a wee strange exchange that goes on there in verse 4 that sometimes is a bit hard to make sense of, where Jesus and Mary are speaking, and what actually Jesus is doing there is he sort of subtly reminding Mary, look, I've just embarked on my Father's mission to save humanity here, And here you're coming to me saying, oh, look, we've run out of wine at this wedding. Do you not think that maybe, you know, your priorities are a little bit wrong? That actually this is a wee bit insignificant compared to what I'm actually meant to be doing. But the great thing about that is, despite him actually saying that to Mary, to just remind her, if you like, to get her priorities right, despite that, he's still willing to help these people out. He's still willing to come and answer Mary's request when she brings it, even though it is so ordinary and it's distracting from what he is actually here to do. Why? Well, because he cares for Mary, and because he cares for the folks that is whose wedding he's at. That's why he's willing to do it. So John gives us here a sign. Tells us a lot of stuff about Jesus, that Jesus is the Son of God, that he's someone who's come, if you like, to fill us, fill believers with his presence, with his spirit, and to transform an outward, lifeless, dead religion into spiritual life in all its fullness. But also that he doesn't just want to be part of our lives in those sort of holy moments, if you like, but he wants to be part of our lives all the time. That's what the sign points to, plus probably a lot of other things I haven't even mentioned. Whenever you look at a sign, though, any sign at all, anywhere, you actually have a choice. You can either do what it says or you can ignore it. If you're driving up to a sign that says danger, cliff ahead, you can either ignore it, which is probably not a good thing to do, and say, oh, well, they've got it wrong, they put it in the wrong place or whatever, or you can actually do what it says and think, maybe I should stop and actually check. Is there a cliff here? Jesus' signs are exactly the same too. They're not just there for us to have a wee look and go, oh, that's a nice looking sign. You know, the way you might look in salvage hunters and they find all these old signs and things like that lying around, go, oh, that's pretty. It's not just for us to look at. It's for us to respond to. If you want to ignore the sign of Jesus, ignore the fact that he can give new life because you think, no, there wasn't really a miracle or it's all just made up, I don't believe in that Jesus guy, you can do that. Jesus won't force us to respond. But if we do actually look at this sign and respond to it, how do we respond properly to that? The proper response is really there if you look with two groups of people, one with Mary and then the other with the servants. Mary, to begin with, actually comes to Jesus in the wrong way, and that's whenever she gets rebuked for it. She comes as this demanding mother, telling Jesus what he should do because she's the person who's in charge. And Jesus sort of quietly puts her in her place, if you like. But she realizes her mistake, and immediately she comes back to him in faith again, acknowledging him as the Lord, him as the one who's in charge, him as the one who makes the decisions. And that's when she gets her answer. She could have just went off in a huff, said, no, well, whatever, okay, Jesus, if you don't want to be bothered, that's fine. But she keeps coming back. She makes sure that even though she got it wrong the first time, she keeps coming back. And why does she do that? She does it because she knows that Jesus cares. Cares about her, cares about the family. And she also knows that he is able to change things as well. It's important for us actually to realize it's so easy to do it. Sometimes you can think, Jesus wouldn't want to be, there's no point in me bringing that to Jesus and to ask him for help with it, because he has way bigger things to do. He's got lots of people to save, humanity and everything, all sorts of problems in the world to solve. Why would this little problem of mine be of any interest to him? I can't do it, it's not important enough. But we're reminded here, actually, you can bring those things to Jesus because he cares about us enough that he cares about the little things, the everyday things. But also that he's one who is great enough to actually answer any problem. The other reason we tend not to bring things to Jesus to ask for his help, oh, that's too big, Jesus can never solve that. We're reminded here that he can do anything. Even the things we consider impossible are nothing for him. But Mary here isn't the only example of complete trust. The servants, in some ways, actually, from a human point of view, are the guys in the story who got overlooked in this. But just imagine for a minute that you were the servants. Jesus comes to you. Mary says, do whatever he asks. You've run out of wine. And Jesus comes and says, I want you to take those big stone jars. I want you to lump them down in the well. I want you to take quite a lot of time to fill them up right to the brim. And I want you to carry them. And then I want you to take the stuff out of them and take that to the folks in the master. What would you have done? I'd have gone, you're nuts. You're completely off your head. How's that going to solve the problem? And who knows, the water might not even have been particularly drinkable. It might just have been used. How can we do that? But yet, somehow, these servants have seen enough of Jesus to trust him. And so they fill up the jars to overflowing, and when Jesus says, take some out of it and take it to the master, they do it. And as a result, they don't just see the miracle, they are actually able to participate in this miracle that Jesus performed. Imagine what they were like afterwards with each other. Going, did you see that? Wow, that's amazing. Did that actually happen? Did we dream it? They probably talked about it for decades later. Real lesson there for us, if we claim to trust in Jesus. Sometimes in human terms, Jesus asks us to do what seem like absurd things, crazy things. He might ask us to give away everything we have to someone else, even though we're left with little or nothing for ourselves. At times he'll ask us to go and do things that we feel completely and utterly unable to do. I've never done that before. I don't have the training, anything else like that. Trust him to sort out a problem when there doesn't seem to be any human solution. It's a very tiny little phrase, very simple. Do whatever he asks. But when you think about it, so hard to do, but that's real obedience. Even though we might have all sorts of doubts, even though we might think that's completely crazy, faith is actually going, you know what? He's Jesus. He knows what he's doing. Okay, I'll do it anyway. And if we do that, we may well be rewarded by actually seeing Jesus work in ways that we can never imagine and being a part of. Because that's real faith. Real faith doesn't just do things whenever we feel it makes sense. Real faith does it because Jesus asks. And it believes that Jesus cares enough about me to actually want to help me. And it believes that he's big enough and glorious enough to do whatever he says. Compared to the faith of Mary, compared to the faith of those servants, what does my faith look like? Well, thankfully, Mary fails on other occasions as well, because mine certainly doesn't look anything like that. Doesn't look anything like the servants. But can you imagine if we have faith like that? He's a God who cares for us, who wants to help. He's a God who can do everything, even what we think is impossible. But will we trust him enough to actually go with him to do it? And to ask him? Let's just think about that. As we're going to stand together and we're going to your offering is going to be received. And as we do so, we're going to stand and sing a very well-known hymn, which reminds us that in Jesus, we don't have a God who sits remote, but we do have one who is a friend who we can bring all things to. He wants to answer, and he will help, even the impossible. Let's stand and sing What a Friend We Have in Jesus.